This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website as well, stevebeck.com. Midweek, and the Derby news and the Preakness anticipation continues, and we'll continue along with it as well today, including with a visit from Elliot Walden. 10:30, we'll check in with Elliot, and you know, in addition to the Derby win, a second for the WinStar organization when you fold in Super Saver, also, you know, involved all over the place over the weekend, and not the least of which was the Woodford Reserve. There it is. I almost made it the whole Derby lead up and post Derby without making a mistake on the Turf Classic. I think you got to lock into that. The Old Forster Turf Classic and Derby double with Yoshida. And in addition, talk about the satisfaction of a Derby win, I want Elliot to talk about the business, the way in which Kenny Trout and the WinStar team, the way they've approached and more than approached has changed, seemingly been part of the real shift. It's not completely an upheaval. It's not a seismic shift, but it is notable, and it's getting plenty of attention. These agglomeration of ownership teams, and we've discussed it mostly when it comes to the sales. And everybody understands the sharing of the burden and the sharing of the risk when it comes to partnering up. But is it good for the long-term interest of the game? And I know that at some point we got to connect with Saul Kuhlman and let Saul talk about his approach, because he's got, he is probably the most visible when it comes to this approach. But I will mention that last week when we were doing the various Derby histories, and we came across a couple of early Derby winners, and most notably the Jimmy Wingfield ridden pair. Wingfield had won back to back, going back to Alan Adale and His Eminence. And in looking up the history of His Eminence, it came across an owner by the name of McKay. I want to say Clarence McKay. And there was an article from either the Thoroughbred Record, and I took a picture of it, a screen capture, and this was very notable. And this goes back to over 100, back to 1901 was His Eminence. But listen to this, because you'll appreciate it. Because here it is, 100 and 17 years ago, it was one of Mr. McKay's theories that the purchase of yearlings was a lottery, and he preferred to buy developed racehorses, paying high prices for them, but in the end, saving a great amount of money that might have been paid for worthless yearlings. In the term that he was engaged in racing, he was more than fairly successful, his horses having won a number of great stakes and a liberal share of money. His most noted victory, however, having been when he won the Metropolitan in 1901 with Bannistar, the first horse to race under his colors, turquoise blue with black sash and cap. And actually, turquoise blue, that's the reverse of, who's got, that's very similar to Eclipse, actually, to Eclipse is, they're black with the blue sash, right? Or blue with the black sash, something like that, similar colors. Anyway, this I've been carrying this around for over a week, and I wanted to slip it in and use it as partly a conversation point. And I've quoted Aaron Yagoda as well. Aaron says something very similar, that the reason he doesn't breed his own is he doesn't want God making his bloodstock decisions. It always makes me laugh. And you know, here's McKay. McKay was a guy who was young. It was the son of a wealthy, I forget what, some kind of business, and then he had to get out of the business after the death of his father, in fact, and that was what this was in reference to. But he had bought his Eminence, I think, as a 4-year-old. I think as a 4-year-old, after his 3-year-old year, not when he won the Derby. The Derby win went to owner trainer. I think it was Frank Van Meter, but it's not as if buying into ready-made horses is some revolutionary concept. And that, that was to me the lesson in here. Here you go, 1901, 19, turn of the century, turn of the last century. So the other discussion, obviously, with Elliott Walden, the decision yesterday to run Quip in the Preakness. Quip is confirmed to go, and on that front, with Windstar, and this is a Windstar homebred that China Horse Club partnered up. One of the complaints about these giant partnerships is that they tend to concentrate talent in just too few hands. However, you look at the Tampa Bay Derby winner in this case, Quip, with upstart trainer Rudolph Brissett. So, does that belie the whole, big outfit, big partnership question mark? So we'll have a good discussion with Elliott Walden. And for Walden, I did notice that one of the talking points about Preakness, a race that they haven't won as an organization, Windstar. Exaggerator was on his way to Windstar as a stallion, but he was only under contract for his stud career. They were not involved in his racing portion. So, two chances between Justify and Quip. The other news at Preakness, we'll give you some quick highlights. Chad Brown still monitoring and considering with Good Magic. Lucas, of course, with his pair, Bravazo and Sporting Chance. And there is a little bit of that little bit of that Orb Derby postscript. Oxbow, there's a little bit of that undercurrent for Coach. Lone Sailor is a go. Tom Amos, Diamond King, who won his way in via the Federico Tessio win. For Chuck Zachney's Cash is King, the DJ Stable and partners, John Service, and Tenfold, who was added to the mix over the weekend, the Winchell homebred. So two Curlins potentially, if good magic goes, and Tenfold. And Give Me a Minute, who turned up yesterday on some confirmation notes out of Dave Joseph at Pimlico. And, of course, getting ready to kick off the Pimlico meet, the Preakness meet at Old Hilltop tomorrow, I think, right? Tomorrow, I think they, if I'm not mistaken, I will quickly check. I think tomorrow's the first, yes, tomorrow's the first day. So there's your quick Preakness glance. We'll talk to Marty McGee either at 10 or 11. Top of hour two or top of hour three with Marty, who is, of course, with everybody else scattered to the winds, Dave Grenig and Mike Welch and Jay Privman. Marty patrolling the backstretch and keeping tabs of things at Churchill, and that, of course, included yesterday with the ever evolving podiatry with Justify and the exam that came via KHRC vets and Dr. Scalay and bruising, which apparently is close to behind Justify, and either you would expect, actually did not check. I think it looks like tomorrow for him to go back to the track. Jimmy Barnes was also part of the quotes. And, of course, the whole equation from Sunday through yesterday. And Baffert being criticized for his response to the question of what clearly was amiss and what, where the discomfort was, the origins of the discomfort, and that that'll probably linger, but ideally the bruising doesn't linger and inhibit Justify going toward Baltimore next week. The other storylines that are lingering, the woman, Margaret Reed, from Austin, Texas, mentioned it either yesterday or Monday when the story came out pretty quickly, but now we know her name and a little bit more. Margaret Reed is at Retama with friends, puts together the $18 pick five ticket, not a 50-cent ticket, with 36 combinations. Margaret's going to high wire it for a dollar pick five. And, you know, I mentioned, again, I can't remember now if it was yesterday or Monday, but clearly an $18 ticket, two singles, the use of two horses in one race, and the use of three each in two other races. So 3x3x2x1x1 is what she obviously put together. And you can easily cross off one of the singles as Justify. That's fine. Then for her to tiptoe through that opening leg, through the Pat Day, and catch Funny Duck is quite something. And honestly, to only use, I guess, obviously, she must have, I'm going to guess that maybe Limousine Liberal might have been one of, maybe that was one of her other singles. Maybe that was one of her other singles. And I could see that. I could see. I mean, he was his third choice, and a horse that on paper, and she says, I mean, she's not a super serious player, but she can identify what's going on in the program, is how she described her interest and her level of play. And that's what I'm going to guess, that's what she did, that she singled Limousine Liberal, singled Justify, and then 3x3x2 within the middle portion. Because Maraud was not easy to get to. Funny Duck obviously is a fortunate inclusion if you're going three deep or two deep. I would guess she probably went too, maybe she went too deep in the old Forster. So we're trying to get her. Anyway, reaching out to Rotama, 1.2 million, just a little bit shy of what the connections of Justify heard. It's unbelievable. It really is spectacular. Yeah, I'm going to say, without knowing the details yet, she singled Imperial Hint, singled Justify, went three deep in the American Turf and caught Maraud, three deep in the Pathé Mile and catches Funny Duck, and two deep in the Turf and gets Yoshida. Tremendous job. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It is, and frankly, this thing should be broadcast from the rooftop. I mean, this is the real shining example. It's the shining ticket on the hill for her to hit this and take down, what, 40% of the pool. 1.2 million with that. It paid 600,000 for 50 cents. It's great. Just absolutely spectacular. So we'll that one, that story is going to continue. There's also the pick six. When Marty joins us, we'll talk about the single six carryover, half of the pot. You know, last year this didn't come into play. It did the year before, the first year that it happened. And half the pot continues as a seeding of a jackpot bet, and the other half must be forced out tomorrow. And it's a good sequence. It's a good sequence of racing that Ben Huffman put together for tomorrow. So we'll talk to Marty about that as well as the rest of the news. And Marty, by the way, two horses that killed me, that Galton. Marty had Galton. That was Friday, I think. And Marty had Yoshida. Both on top. Unbelievable. Good job by Marty. Galton was in that fourth race, broke up what was going on Friday. And then Yoshida. Why? I don't know. I coming back as a 4-year-old, whatever. I don't know. I discounted. So we'll talk to Martin about that. And Pete Fornatel first. We'll talk about the brothers Magui. Patrick and Frank Magui, first and third in the Derby Betting Challenge. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. John White later. Seth Merrow. I told you about Elliot already. I think we got to get Ben. I owe Ben Colebrook a call. And I got to talk to you about, maybe we'll save it for a little bit more for Sid, but the word came that Air France, the wonderful French deputy mayor, Brian Burns, Mountjoy, the Dam of Smooth Air, one of my absolute favorites, and she had folding complications from the Bernardini fold that she delivered. Our hearts go out. I sent Brian a note this morning. More about her later. Let's take a break. Pete Fornatel first.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by five.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a grade one winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery flew home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton two-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I race my feet, I miss a beat from my seat. Don't care, get off my back. I make a sound, I wash down round, so round, get off, don't touch my stack. Pressure outside, just hit me high, cause I'm about to crack. One, two, three, turn around. Don't you watch me now?
We're back at the races, 20 plus into hour one, and we'll catch up with Pete as soon as Casey finds him. And we're doing some scheduling tap dances. Marty's tied up here early, so I will. I'll figure this out as we talk to Pete Fornatel. He joins us now. Pete, good morning.
Good morning to you. Sitting here working on an article for DRF about this super fun promotion we're working on for Friday night. It's the return of Outplay JK. Folks can win their way in a last chance feeder for this World Horse Players Tour Santa Anita event. And if you finish ahead of JK, you get your money back, and we'll be doing it as part of a live broadcast starting at 3:30 on Friday night. You can read all about it at drf.com in a little bit.
Very nice. Well, we certainly read in DRF the recap of the Kentucky Derby betting challenge. I did my best to give people the link on Saturday so they could follow the contest. I think after the 6th, I put it out there so people could follow and then let it be known that Patrick Magui, the remarkable Magui, and they are the Magui brothers and all of the the entourage, the Norlands and Louisiana teams that descend on wagering venues, Pete, they were out in force for Derby, and it, as always, it's a high wire act when it comes to, you know, making the decisions that will put people on top of leaderboards, and particularly when, you know, when the wheel stops spinning.
It's a strong group of players from down there, and the McGoeys are at the top of the list. Bit ironic that Frank, the guy who he has a job, he's a salesman for Dean Foods, but spends a lot more time at the races and worrying about horses than his brother Patrick. Patrick, for all the success he's had, two Breeders' Cup betting challenges and now a Kentucky Derby betting challenge to go with it, doesn't even really consider himself a contest player. He loves contests because he thinks they're a ton of fun. They get the competitive fires going. Mostly they're a chance to hang out with his brother. They've both done terrifically. Patrick wins the whole thing. Frank, after running second in last year's KDBC, got one spot worse this year, picks up a third. But it's they are one of the great stories in the contest world. Frank, looking forward to him being out at the Santa Anita Preakness Challenge next week. I'll be honest, you know, you're not supposed to, obviously, the contest, whoever ends up at the final table ends up at the final table. It's a Saturday is just a regular contest. But for the purposes of TV, to get Frank McGoey on TV and mic'd up for a couple of days, I'm really hoping I'm hoping his contention runs deep, because he's just such an entertaining figure. And you make the point, Steve, about the thin line. Well, in this case, that line was a nose, because it's sort of great. Patrick originally, he wanted to bet win place on Justify. His point about betting place was great, and you saw it in the way the mutuals turned up. He'd studied this run of winning favorites at the Derby and noticed that the place price had been an overlay relative to the win price and with all of these favorites. So that was sort of his conservative hedge bet, was to have some place money. If the horse gets beat, he figured he'd at least get his money back for the tournament. But what he needed for the horse to win was to hit his basically what his kill bet, as Mike Maloney would call it, which was $100 trifecta. Now, he originally played it where he had Audible in the second and third spots. It was just over his bankroll. He had to throw one horse out of second at the exact last second. That horse ended up being Audible. So there at the line, you know, he was going to do well anyway with his Justify win place. But he was not going to win the tournament had that photo gone to Audible instead of Good Magic. So the razor-thin line that can separate victory from defeat in these handicapping contests on display once again there on Saturday.
There was also, in addition to the, you know, the ultimate result and the Derby, which is the last of the races that the contest participants are betting on, the a couple of fortuitous elements, and I read with interest how McGoey likes to come to these events early and get a chance to watch horses during, you know, their sessions and the lead up, and, you know, part of that reinforced, I think Justify seemed to come to Louisville with Justify as his Derby winner, but Good Magic's appearance reinforced the way he approached the ticket building, and I would guess that, you know, that story that he told you about Quiet Concert, the claimer that happened to be running on the one of the cards during the week on Thurby, and that when they went to see the horse in the paddock, the horse had been claimed away from them. He noticed American Gal and how dynamic she looked coming up to the effort for Simon Callahan that came in the Umana. And sometimes I've said this before, these horses kind of come into your crosshairs for one reason or another.
That's right. They tout themselves sometimes, and that was definitely the case. The McGoey story very much involves both kismet and karma. And the kismet piece of the equation, exactly what you were talking about. Frank had spent a lot of time with Quiet Concert, watched him train a bunch, felt a connection to the horse, wanted to go see how he was doing. and then boom. And we've all had that experience. Those of us who enjoy, you know, just in an amateur's way, in my case, looking at horse flesh, that sometimes one will just grab your eye and take it. And you can't, you kind of can't stop looking at them. They look so good coming out of their skin. Frank's description was looked like she was ready to explode. And Frank's a guy who doesn't often change his opinions in races. And he had had a note, I think he, I'm trying to remember which horse he had the note on. It might have been Ivy Bell. But he had a note on another horse in the race in his trip notes, which he takes very detailed trip notes every day. Humana Distaff winner was the note. So for him, his betting personality to come off a horse he'd already identified a month out as the winner of the race, not the kind of thing he usually does, but such was the moment and how good American Gal looked. And that was one of the big things that got them going, Patrick agreeing with that opinion. Also, we should clarify, these guys, they share handicapping information, but their betting is completely independent. A lot of contests, you know, sometimes it goes like this, where they both do well. Sometimes they both do poorly. Sometimes one does well and the other does poorly. But this is not a collusion situation, just to underline. The betting is not coordinated. The handicapping is, which is permissible in every contest format that I know of. But that was where the kismet came into play. And then my favorite part of the story is the karma. These are players who believe in taking care of the people who take care of them and spreading the wealth and sharing a score. Famously, Patrick, when he won the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, I guess it was the second time with Fort Larned, had a good rapport with his favorite beer vendor, who he'd gone to see a couple of times throughout the day, got to talking with her before Fort Larned's race and asked her what her favorite number was or something. I think he was going to, you know, for a tip, sometimes players will buy a ticket for a particularly good service person. And she said something to the effect of, I don't have a favorite number, but I don't like the number three. And he said, well, you know, if the number three wins this race, I'm going to stand to win some money and we'll take care of you. I want to turn number three into your favorite number. Fort Larned wins, of course. He issues a very kind tip to the beer tender, and her colleagues carry her around on her shoulders like she just won the Super Bowl. And then I think with that moment in mind, the mother-daughter team in the Gold Room, who'd taken care of the McGoeys over the weekend, received a very nice tip in the aftermath of not only Justify winning, but Good Magic holding on for second, and showed extreme gratitude. And Patrick, and I believe him when he said this, said that was his favorite part of the weekend, was getting to make somebody else, a hardworking person, to get to make their day and let them share in the excitement. And I think it's a good model for horse players to consider, you know, paying it forward, doing unto others, all that good stuff, spreading some good energy out in the world. The McGoeys certainly no strangers to that.
What were the prize packages? Because there was a few seats out part of
Breeders' Cup. I think there was Breeders' Cup seats to the first several. And I know that Patrick got an extra 100,000, and I believe Frank got an extra 45,000. So good prize money added, as well as Breeders' Cup seats. And of course, that Breeders' Cup seat feels all the more significant when it's going to Patrick, given that he'll be heading for his third possibility of becoming the only three-time champion of that event. Nobody else even has two. He'll now be getting to go for three, also winning a Breeders' Cup seat and worthy of a shout-out for a great tournament. Alan Harburg, is it Harburg? I hope I'm getting Alan's name right, who crushed in the Old Forester turf race and ended up getting the bankroll up to 90,000, which would have been good enough to win any other year in the brief history of the Kentucky Derby Betting Challenge. He ends up splitting the two McGoey brothers late, but a terrific performance for which he gets, I think, 60,000 as well as a Breeders' Cup seat. Some really good playing this year, and some good results for people, even if our friend Jonathan Kinchin managed to get himself DQ'd by not reading the rules properly.
Well, and Nick, I was following Nick and his numbers, and he ended up, Nick did a lot of work to end up losing a total of 500 from his initial 12,000. It was 12,000 to buy in, and Nick came out with 11,463, which made me laugh.
A lot of good action. A lot of good action for the weekend, and he put himself in a position where if he'd been right even one more time, I think he would have had a good shot to participate in the prize pool. But that's one of the great things about live bank contests as opposed to Mythical. Mythical money, you can go and have the equivalent run that Nick had, and you're going to be out whatever your entry fee is completely. At least he gets rewarded for the fact that he was right plenty and essentially turns it more or less into a free roll when you figure in a little bit of a budget for the action involved. And I know he had a great moment. I'm sure you've seen the video, Steve, in the booth with Travis Stone calling the Derby. He gets the high five at the end of the video. Our friends Joe Doc from NYRA and Nick Tamaro making cameos, and Travis just once again with a tremendous Kentucky Derby call. And that's always fun to watch those bird's eye view videos, and you can find that one all over Twitter, either at Travis Stone, or I'm sure I sent it around. If folks haven't seen it yet, that's definitely worth a watch, and I'm sure it was another high point of the weekend for Nick, notwithstanding the fact that he ran pretty well in the contest, but didn't end up in the prize pool.
Well, and we had the conversation with Travis early in Derby week, and he talked about some of the technical aspects and how he approaches it, and you can watch it. I'll send out the link to it, and another terrific Derby call, absolutely, by Travis. A couple of other names beside Patrick and Frank, first and third. You mentioned Alan Harburg. Bob Wickling was fourth. Bill Koch, or Koch, was fifth. Tim Yoler,
Billy Koch,
sixth.
That's the little red feather, Billy Koch, I think.
Oh, it was Billy Koch. Oh, my gosh.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. You're right. Look at that. How about that? Boy trapped in refrigerator eats foot. Frank Mastari was seventh, 36,000. Chuck Grubbs, 34,000 for eighth. Steve Jaffe, 30,870 or 87 was ninth. Mark Stanton, 27,300. And Dan Reel, 24,000 even for 11th. I'll go all the way to Nick. Zachary Barnett, these are all plus figures, over 12,000. Zachary Barnett, 17,477. Doug Knackman, whose name we see regularly, 16,422. And Robert Rosette. Those were the 14 players that finished above the 12,000 buy-in.
You've just given me an idea, Steve. I need to track down those players, certainly the ones that I know. Now that we know they're running hot, they've got some money, get them to come out to Santa Anita and play in this World Horse Players Tour Preakness event. There's some names on there that maybe I can just do a little bit of arm twisting now that I know they've got a little extra money in the bankroll.
I love it. Well, you should also go get Margaret Reed, who's got the $1.2 million from the pick five hit. She did better than everybody.
Name? I hadn't seen her name. Is that the woman from Austin?
Margaret Reed.
Well, she's a Rotama regular like JK, so I'll put him on the task of recruiting her to come out. I love it. And for those wondering about what I was saying about Jonathan, he would have run third in the contest, but, you know, don't feel, if you're a JK fan, don't feel too bad. He did manage to get that bankroll up to 80,000 with a sharp made double with Yoshida and Justify. So he'll be seeing his name on leaderboards for a little while longer, at least.
Let's segue, and there probably are some other results and some things you want to fit in, but I do want to talk about your impressions of Derby and your wagering notebook, the way things turned out. Before we do that, any other notable results?
It was a mellow weekend. It was a mellow weekend. We did, I believe we did have one player win into the Saratoga Challenge. I didn't even recap it, though. It was more about feeders leading into all the exciting stuff that's coming up. Folks should check out tournaments.drf.com for a full list of that stuff. But really, this weekend was all about all about the Derby, and, you know, I thought it was a tour de force performance by Justify. The early fractions, he was able to withstand and moving fluidly and finding just enough in the stretch. I thought there was a moment of doubt in the stretch when Good Magic came to him, and he just had enough finish to hold it off and looks like a very serious good Triple Crown contender and Kentucky Derby winner to me. Betting wise, I was very fortunate that I'd come up with that international arbitrage idea that I think we talked about on the show, was able to get on Justify early enough at a price I was comfortable with. I think if I'd been left to the 5-2 in such a deep and competitive race, I probably would have been persuaded to go another way. And it's a good thing I cashed that future bet, Steve, because it was pretty much pure wagering pain other than that for me. But I end up being fortunate and having, you know, sometimes it only takes one good idea to get yourself out and up. And I got very lucky not to take a serious beating this year's Kentucky Oaks and Derby, but I enjoyed the racing nonetheless.
I haven't expanded on it, but you talk about the future wagers, and of course there was the story that's also circulating, speaking of big victories coming out of Derby, there's the Vegas future wager at 500-1 or 300-1, $500 at 300-1 on Justify as well, in advance of his maiden win that is circulating. I will note, I got lucky with the Oaks Derby double future wager, and I basically leveraged Justify. I used the ultimately 8 different horses to Justify in the Oaks, and or from the Oaks to the Derby, and that brought back $35.50, and I had that a handful of times, which was kind of fun. And the future wager that came back the most generous was that sire pool, the sire wager, tiny little pool of $15,000 for the sire exacta. And if you had the 15-4, your Scat Daddy Curlin exacta was worth $505.20 for $2.
That's great.
And Scat Daddy, who I heard maligned virtually all Derby week, that's the historic hoodoo that also falls, which is the Stormcat line stallion.
That's right.
Gets a Derby winner. And, of course, Scat Daddy will have another chance next year with his final crop, which is going through the 2-year-old in training sale. But $54.80 if you bet Scat Daddy in the sire future.
Yeah, clearly some people who are believing in that Stormcat hoodoo idea, which seemed not unlike Apollo, to, you know, one of those that was just due to be broken. I love statistics. I think they're really interesting. Obviously, they inform my play in a lot of different ways, but, you know, sometimes you really look inside these numbers, and they're interesting. They're really fun to talk about, but they don't dictate the outcome of races, to more basic things like, oh, I don't know who the best and fastest horse is. I tend to try to bet more money on that aspect of horse racing, and it's served me well over the years.
A few other results and kinds of things, Pete, that you might have been right about, whether you bet them properly or not. Anything?
I was thrilled to see Yoshida and the return to the races there. That was pretty darn cool. And it sounds like Ask It will be next on his dance card. I'm really excited to see how he progresses going forward. I feel like he would have had every right to have needed that race, and really, I thought, put in a gutsy, impressive performance against a really good foe. So he's one I'm extremely excited to see his next race. And looking internationally, I thought that the Saxon Warrior race in the 2000 Guineas was super impressive and important. I'm sure people like Sid, who know way more about this stuff than me, could speak about it much more eloquently, but he seems like a horse who could play a role, not just this year, potentially being pointed to the English Triple Crown, but also it's not impossible when the history of the great operation of Coolmore is written that this is a horse who could feature a chapter with them finally getting the precious Japanese deep impact Sunday Silence blood into the operation when looking ahead at the could be a great outcross for so many of the mares they have over there. Could be very interesting and was just very impressive. Another horse who, when I studied the form for the race, I said, really cool horse, probably needs farther to have the speed to win the guineas. You know, I'm not going to, as JK likes to say, I'm not going to cut in line to take the even money for the Derby, but certainly looks like a horse who is going to take some beating and is going to be really fun to follow for the rest of this year.
On that topic, I haven't slipped out the story that emerged the last couple of days from Judmont and Enable. She's sidelined, and we'll see. We'll see how quickly she gets back to the races, but her return is delayed. If you haven't seen that, you know, a few other results that we haven't talked about yet either, Pete, as I look back to Friday and haven't had a chance to reach for Steve Asmussen, who won his 8,000th race. That was certainly notable with looking at Lee of all horses, and not just of all horses, with a complete change up in running style, getting up on the lead. But one performance that has gone a little bit under discussed thus far, you know, there's so much to absorb out of Derby weekend. Mia Mischief in that 8 Bells, she was spectacular.
Ran a great race. That was definitely something that caught the eye, and I was lucky to have. I didn't make any money on the day, but I was fortunate that wasn't one of the places that I got knocked out. Looked strong enough on the various figures and put in a terrific effort to get the job done.
Well, and Backyard Heaven has been lauded as well with that big performance, and he just took it to Always Dreaming, and we'll see what happens long term.
Looks a divisional player for sure. Yeah. And you know, the horse figured to run well. That exceeded expectations, and it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do next there for sure.
Well, and Toinette, we talked to Neil Drysdale. That was really the best call in a lot of ways of the weekend, Toinette, and she absolutely touted herself coming into the Edgewood, and the 3-year-old Philly Turf Division looks like it's going to hold up its end.
I think they're all good, the top three in there. You know, Rushing Fall so keen early and still ran a blinder, and then Daddy is a Legend. I've heard a lot of people criticize that ride. To be honest, I know it didn't look pretty, but, you know, the horse to beat's in front of you, and You go there, or you're kind of just seeding the race. Erad's trying to win the race. I thought it was okay. I mean, I know it didn't look pretty, but all things considered, it did set things up for Toinette, who ran great too. But I think it'd be fun to watch those three come back. I don't know who I'd give preference to. They all seem to have a lot of talent.
Well, we had a fun conversation with Drysdale. Yeah, that was one of the calls
sure.
I was looking forward to making. And, you know, yesterday with Cassie, it's funny, it just happens to, as I look at that race, since we're talking about it, Got Stormy, who ran a sneaky good fourth in here at 22-1, and kind of came in with a bit of a look. Her dam, I see Super Phoebe. Super Phoebe, and I mentioned before we went to the break, before you joined us, you know, the passing of Air France. And Super Phoebe, a daughter, and there's Mountjoy Stable, sure enough, with Pope McLean and the McLean's breeding, at Crestwood breeding Got Stormy. And in addition, that one of her more recent babies, she's got that American Pharoah, now yearling, that the Lieblongs bought, I think, for, I want to say, $400,000 or $500,000. So Air France was even prominent over the weekend, and so saddened for Brian and his family, you know, who we've featured over the years many times. And Air France herself, Benny Stutz, Benny ended up with her and got her to break her maiden, and she got hurt coming out of a stake at Calder, I think, and went to the shed and got Super Phoebe, got Smooth Air, both by Smooth Jazz. You want to talk an overachieving Florida stallion. So that just
I'm fascinated
rabbit hole.
By that stuff.
Yeah.
And you're right. It is, the breeding aspect of the game can be a rabbit hole. But I think when I came into horse playing, I didn't, you know, the breeding stuff is so over your head. But over the years, it's one of the things that I've enjoyed the most paying attention to, because there are, and you see this in the contest world, guys like Steve Wolfson Sr. and Jr. come to mind, where their deep knowledge of these female families and angles you can come up with on the knowing who the second dam was and things like that. I feel like breeding is an area where horse players can get an edge that is not being looked at by computer groups and a lot of the big bettors. I think it's a fascinating world, and while I don't have the knowledge that you or many of the guests on the show have, Steve, I always think it's interesting to hear about and learn about these blue hens and these famous families. I think it's a fascinating aspect of the game that a lot of horse players would do well to try to pay attention to. Also, the business end of the breeding business, I think, informs a lot of what you see on the racetrack in a way that can help you as a horse player.
Well, we'll look forward to Baltimore. What's you making you'll be at Santa Anita for the taping.
Tuesday night, I go out to Santa Anita. We're doing some scouting and other putting things together for those few days. Filming begins. The contest is Saturday, Sunday. You'll be able to sign up. Let us know you're coming. That would be a big help. But you can even walk in and sign up the day of newbie. I think usually the registration's right outside the Eddie Logan suite. Saturday, filming B-roll, getting stuff out of the way. And then Sunday, first ever live bankroll final table. We'll be filming it for this pilot. All new format you can read about in the pages of DRF. It's going to be a lot of fun. The Preakness will be part of the contest, as will the other two stakes. People enjoyed the show I did last week with Andy Beyer and Mike Watchmaker a ton. Also got some nice comments about the one I did with Craig Mulkowski and Jay Privman. But Beyer and Watch are being pressed back into service. We'll do something special, a quick little Preakness review. Doesn't seem like the kind of race we'll need a whole hour to go through, but we'll do a little half-hour show on the Preakness Thursday night, and then the contest over the weekend. Anybody who has questions about the contest or any of this DRF content of mine, hit me up at LoomsBoldly on Twitter, or you can email me, podcast@drf.com.
Excellent. And, Pete, before we go, we've got just a minute or two. The online action through this weekend. Actually, we've got a very good, particularly at Belmont, but we've got plenty of good racing this weekend.
Yeah, it should be great, and I'm glad you set me up for that. I should have mentioned, folks looking, rather than buy into the Preakness Tournament, why not win your way in? We've got the Outplay JK Last Chance Feeder on Friday night. Then Saturday is sort of the regular Last Chance contest, where it's you put up $458 and 1 in 12 will win the $5,000 buy-in to the Preakness. Should have mentioned, all the prize money in the Preakness contest is added, so that $5,000 will act completely as your bankroll. And then another opportunity, I bet there'll be an At the Races listener or two in this one. We have the Big Money Last Chance on Sunday. For that one, you put up $1,090, but 1 in 5, very player favorable ratio, 1 in 5. Will win those $5,000 seats. We've got some other action on DRF tournaments as well this weekend. Stuff coming up for Saratoga, for Del Mar. But right now, and of course the Monmouth Pick Your Prize, Belmont. But the focus right now, the next up on the dance card is this World Horse Player Tour Santa Anita event. Go to tournaments.drf.com and check out all your options to win your way in.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Pete, we're a third of the way, and you better better be ready. It comes at you fast, and we'll head to Baltimore Sunday and bring everybody Preakness Week, and we'll be keeping tabs. We'll touch base with you from California as you get ready for this exciting venture, and good luck getting things rolling out there.
I always love taking a walk in Silver Lake and checking out the L.A. sunrise and chatting with you, Steve. We'll do that again next week.
Pete Fornatel, everybody. Looms boldly, and anything you need. Anything you need on this front, just check with Pete on Twitter, write to him, and he'll be happy to help. And we're looking forward to the pilot that they're producing and see if can't get some traction, anything that features the game. And, of course, when you have things like Margaret Reed winning $1.2 million on an $18 ticket, that's the kind of thing. That's the kind of thing that you can feature and make people raise their eyebrows. We say all the time, you got a fighting chance. You know, she built a ticket and brings back seven figures. Just shows you. I mean, it's possible. You got an angle on things, and you can make it work for you as well. And the contest players, they're a hotbed for this. I mean, in terms of utilizing opinion and leveraging it, and so the TV portion, the visuals and the strategies and the way it can be presented, it absolutely would have a great, certainly versus things like the poker. The cards, there's a little bit of strategy, but, really, it's random, much more random. We're going to take a top-of-the-hour break, and some people would consider the next conversation with Sid Fernando, the breeding random, and just lucky to some degree. You need a little bit of luck, but there's plenty of science to it. Pedigree conversation next with Sid Fernando. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Spent a nice portion of Saturday under the tunnel, actually, with John Secura, and variety of topics with John. We'll talk to Sid next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by five.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a grade one winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery Flew Home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton 2-Year-Olds in Training Sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vaughn, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.